Rodgers in trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
To the Glass Half Empty podcast. I'm Ryan Glasspiegel. We are joined by Sharif Ali, who is a producer on The Herd on FS1. And we're going to be interviewing the legendary Jim Ross. Jim has a book out, Slobber Knocker, My Life in Wrestling. And he's also got a stand-up show in Boston this Saturday, December 16th. And we'll have a link on the website to buy tickets for that. So I wanted to talk to you about the book, Slobber Knocker. As you described in it, you once found yourself in Muhammad Ali's home, and he offered you a suit that Elvis wore to give to your mother, and he just thought nothing of it. How did that happen, and what was it like riding around New Orleans with Ali?
Well, I did a little bit more than that even, Ryan. I got the opportunity to share a suite. We had a common area, and each had our bedrooms at the Hyatt across the street from the then Superdome. And so I spent about 3 or 4 days with Muhammad. He was great. I wish I was smart enough to take better notes or recorded something, but it was a bucket list memory I'll never forget. And I was at his house doing some vignettes with Joel Watts in L.A., and he showed us around. We went upstairs in the attic. And he had a ton of things, I mean, awards, all kinds of gifts. And there was a yellow, sparkly yellow gold thing in a box. I pulled it out and I said, "Hey, champ, what's this?" He said, "Oh, that's something Elvis gave me. Did your mom like Elvis?" I said, "Oh, of course. Everyone likes Elvis." And he said, "Well, give that to her." And I looked at it. It was a gold lamé jumpsuit that Elvis wore at the Las Vegas Hilton. And he took it off in his dressing room and gave it to the champ. And I said, "Man, I can't accept that. I knew my mother would love it, but she'd also be miffed at me for, you know, taking advantage, so to speak." And so I didn't take it, but I often wonder what the hell it'd be worth these days to have a stage-worn, sweat-stained Elvis Presley gold jumpsuit. We'll never know.
And then what was it like just going around the city of New Orleans with him? Was he by far the most recognizable figure you've been around? I mean, you've been around like Ric Flair, Steve Austin, The Rock at the height of their fame. But I have to imagine that Ali must have like even taken the cake over them.
Absolutely. He's at a different level. He was wonderful. He and I had a great rapport. He liked me. He liked my sense of humor. He was always shooting jabs at me that I could feel the air go by my face. So it was funny because Bill Watts was going to teach Muhammad how to throw a working punch. And all Muhammad did was wink at me because he knew that he could throw a working punch. He'd thrown many of them in boxing. And so Bill was teaching him how to throw the working punch, but his punches are as good as any of the boys I'd ever been around in wrestling. So it is a genuine, good-hearted guy. He didn't have a personal agenda that you had to believe as he believed or have to do as he did. He judged everybody on their own merits. He was a class act, man. I've never met anybody in my life that impacted me as a person, as a professional, as much as my 4 days with Muhammad Ali.
Another thing you mentioned in your book is that in your time in WCW, three people you were very high on, but they didn't necessarily pan out there before leaving the promotion for the WWF at the time, were The Undertaker, who was referred to as Mean Mark Calloway in WCW, Mick Foley, who at the time was Cactus Jack, and Steve Austin. Was there anybody that you thought would be a big star that didn't pan out? And then by the similar token, is there anybody who your first impression of was that they were like totally going to get over huge, that they weren't going to get over huge, but then they proved you wrong?
Oh man, I have a philosophy, Ryan. I don't bring negatives forward much. I don't carry it around. I've often said that my truck has a room for the positive stuff in my life and no room for the negative. I really haven't committed a memory who I thought would make it and they didn't. You know, it's a half empty glass all the time. And I understand the media likes that stuff. I get it. But I don't really have the answer to that. I was lucky. And we're lucky recording re-signing these guys. So, but it was obvious the guys that I talked to, that you mentioned, were no-brainers. I wasn't a majority of that assessment, but I certainly believe that Undertaker and Mick Foley and Steve were hits. But I'm glad my intuition paid off.
Interesting. I wanted to maybe just jump forward a little bit to some modern day kind of WWE, and Ryan and I are always kind of going back and forth about Brock Lesnar and Strowman, and so in the last Strowman versus Brock Lesnar match, Strowman didn't look too strong. I know everything's subject to change in WWE, but the supposed plan has been for Reigns versus Lesnar at WrestleMania next year. If I were in the universe, I think I'd say Strowman is ready to be the next champion, and that it'd be huge. It'd be a huge asset to have the belt back on every single Raw as opposed to once a month or so. How would you book Strowman versus Lesnar at the Royal Rumble?
You know, it depends on the destination. I don't know where they're going at the end of the day. I don't know if they're going to go to... Obviously, if you want the title change at WrestleMania, where it makes a bigger impact, so to speak, marketing-wise, everything, then you need Lesnar to retain at Royal Rumble and get to the WrestleMania, if that's their plan. The booking has always worked best, fellas, when you know what they're going to do or what the company's going to do, and you work backwards. That's how I book cards. That's how I help write TV. You got to go. Where do we want to get? What's our destination here? Now we can vary our journey and our route, but we need to have a destination established. So if a big if, hell, I don't know. It's a big if that if they want Strowman to be the Universal Champion, there's no better place for him to win it than at WrestleMania. And is he ready? Who the hell is ready? I don't know who's ready. If you book him intelligently, and I seem like they do, he didn't get too far out of his wheelhouse. He's a fascinating talent. I see somewhere down the road that he'll be the champion, a big time champion there. And I think as we go into 2018, somewhere in the calendar year of 18, I am, as a fan, that's all I'm going by. I see Reigns as a champion, and I see Strowman as a champion. You got two brands, they have two really good, athletic, impressive guys, and I think that would work out just fine. I got no problem with that stuff. I'm not on this Piss on Roman Reigns tour. I promise you that. And I read stuff online, on social media, and people are absolutely knocking themselves out, knee-jerking Roman Reigns. He got caught in a crossfire of that Daniel Bryan thing. A couple years ago, where it was. And so that's not his fault. He didn't book it. And you can't always predict how the audience is going to react. So I believe that the covers at WWE right now are very plentiful, very full. So the best talents in the entire world work there. So I whatever they decide to do is going to probably be fine. But I'd like, if somebody said, JR, would you endorse Strowman and Reigns as champions? Hell yes. Only though when the journey fit the destination.
You just said in your last answer something that I thought was really interesting. You mentioned the cupboard at WWE being full, and I agree with you. They have a lot of depth of talent, But I do wonder if they have enough people at the top. I don't want to sound mean, and I know that he's had a legendary career and he's accomplished a lot in WWE, but I don't like the amount that they're using Kane around the main event picture in the last couple of years.
Well, do you understand why they're using Kane? Do you understand the reason he's there? He's there to put Strowman over. I don't see what's hard to figure out about that. He's a legendary guy with a Hall of Fame career that's had championships in his background. He's a compelling character still, and he's being utilized to advance the Strowman persona. Simple as that.
Yeah, I wanted to pivot back, if I could, to Roman Reigns, and I know WWE and what it seems like is very big into the pedigree and kind of family background. And so do you think Roman Reigns, maybe with the bigger WWE, you know, the criticism from the WWE universe and the fans and people kind of booing and whatnot, do you think that maybe he's a victim of having, you know, being from the same family as The Rock and kind of having maybe unfair standards to compare him to? Does that have any role in a lot of the backlash that he faces from the fans?
I think you got a good point there. You know, he has a family resemblance to The Rock. He's a good-looking kid, the Samoan descent, football player, defensive lineman, just like Rock. They both played in the ACC. So, yeah. I think he's doing fine. You know, I'm for letting the fans make their decisions of who they're going to support or who they're not. But I'd like that to happen, but based on what they see from the performance level, bell to bell of the talents, and are they representing themselves as a professional as opposed to the actual creative? Because I'm assuming, guys, that most fans know that the creative that the talents utilize, the plays they run, so to speak, are not called by them. And that's not a knock. It's always been that way. And when you get to a certain level and you prove that you have a feel for your character and a feel for the team effort and the big picture, then oftentimes you're called on to say, hey, what do you think of this? What if we did this? I've got a couple ideas for it. Which one do you like the better? So I like Roman Reigns. He's durable. I met him as a high school kid. I fell in love with his attitude. And I told him then, even when he was down in Florida at SCW, you know, your body is your ticket, and you gotta fix that. So because he was over 300 pounds, he was a nose tackle at Georgia Tech. He's a rope grader. So I think he's got every athletic component he needs. I just think that he's got to be given a fair chance. And some people, it's like the Cena sucks chance. I don't know if they really think Cena sucks or Kurt Angle sucks, or it's just cool to say sucks. I'm not sure.
Well, I think I agree with everything you just said. Now I'm wondering, though, I don't think that he initially got the reaction WWE was looking for when they had him win the Rumble and The Rock came out and the crowd still booed him. But I do think that WWE's creative has pivoted a little bit, and now they're playing off the boos and writing him accordingly. And we're in an era where the villains and the baby faces, the roles aren't so clearly defined as they might have been in the past. And he's almost booked as a modern day heel, because the hallmark of a heel is you want to book someone that the fans want to see get their ass whipped. And for whatever reason, whether they got there on purpose or not, he fits that bill now.
Yeah, but I'll tell you this from my own personal philosophy. Wrestling villains who want to be really cool and sell lots of t-shirts are not villains. They shouldn't be SCP themselves or the fans that they're a villain, they're a heel. They're not. You're right. It's real simple. If you will pay money to go leave your home, get in your car, drag the kids, your buddies, buy a ticket, $5 beer, you're going to...
Five? What? Where are we talking about $5 beer? Sorry to interrupt.
Is that too high or too low?
too low. They're $10-$11 at the Allstate Arena, but
I'm not a beer man, but nonetheless, you're probably actually accurate. But you got to be motivated to spend all that cash before the matches even start, and then you got to be motivated to see the villain, a real villain, get his ass beat, like you said. But I don't know where all that stands now. People like cool, they like trends, monkey see, monkey do, you know, Cena sucks, you know, all that crap. It's just, I think some people have never even seen John Cena. Maybe we'll sort of chime in on that, because it seemingly is a popular thing to do. And so I don't give a lot of credence to that stuff, but the cool heels are not heels. Somebody's got to figure that out some of these days. I think Roman Reigns is a star. Whether you want to boo him or whether you want to cheer him, I don't care. If I had a territory, and that'll never happen, by the way, and I had a chance to get him on my team, I'd waste not one second doing so.
Definitely, definitely. So I work at Fox Sports 1, like we discussed, and I follow UFC quite closely, and yeah. I can say that in my experience over the last few years, before her back-to-back losses, no star has shined brighter in the UFC universe than Ronda Rousey. Now, Ronda Rousey, for me personally, as being a lifelong wrestling and WWE fan, when I see the reports and all indications to pointing that Ronda Rousey is headed to WWE, I think it's a marriage made in heaven. I get very excited for it. Let me ask you, now that it appears as if she's going to WWE, how would you book her first angle?
Well, I will say this. Ronda Rousey in WWE is a match made in box office heaven. Undoubtedly. And whether they get their deal done or they don't remains to be seen. I know she's, from what I hear, she's doing some pro wrestling training. I know that she's a big fan of the genre. She's a big fan of Shayna Baszler, who's been signed at WWE, who I really am high on, too. The deal is, you got to get her. I would make sure that there was a major press release, press conference coverage of her signing. At that point, you can spin off it any way you want. You can leave it alone and follow up next week. You can leave it open where somebody, another female, comes in and it takes exception to her deal. You know, the old deal, all you're going to do is come in and make a big money and leave, which I find kind of amusing that some might think that. You know, what else are you supposed to do? Get her 20-year pin and stay 20 years, get a watch? I don't get that. Along the way of her getting the press conference or whatever and shooting an angle and getting married to another talent and then showing her training for it and all these things and having known overexposure on live TV, and then obviously to me she's got to debut at a WrestleMania, whether it be 18 or 19. But to me, WrestleMania should be her destination where she came to WWE and really stepped in the ring as a competitor. And, of course, the first match she's in, I don't know why you beat her. That don't make sense to me, but maybe there's an ulterior motive. I don't know how you invest that kind of money and then lose a one-off deal. That doesn't make any sense. But there's a lot of captivating matchups for her. WWE's done a great job of marketing their female athletes, and they got some damn good talent there now. I thought our roster, when I was doing the talent with Trish and Lita and Jackie Moore and Jazz, gosh, you know, Mickey James, and, you know, on and on. Lisa Verone, there's a ton of them that we had. I love those women because they were athletic and they were reliable and they knew how to work. And we've gone a long cycle now, and now they're back into where arguably the most talented athletic women that have ever competed in their business are now working for WWE, and they're looking for more. So, I'd sign her like she was a major, major star that she is, guys, and then kind of take it from there. But I'd have my destination, my end game, would be Ronda versus blank at WrestleMania, and take it from there.
You're absolutely right. They're building such a deep roster of women, whether it's like Sasha Banks, Bayley, Alexa Bliss, Nia Jax, Becky Lynch, but like Paige is back and she's doing phenomenal in her return after having some rocky personal issues. But the best match for Ronda Rousey is Charlotte Flair, because the athleticism between those two is just off the charts.
I'm not going to argue that point. I think that Charlotte Flair is the most dominant female athlete in the genre of pro wrestling that I've ever seen. She's extraordinarily special. She reminds me in that division, shall we say, that she's like a female Hulk Hogan. Not just the fact that she's big, blonde. She's amazingly athletic. She has great instinct. Hell, I guess you'd say she's got pretty damn good instinct. So you might be right, but what about Asuka?
Oh, that'd be great too.
There's a lot of. What I'm saying is, there's a lot of possibilities. A lot of possibilities. What about Paige? You know, what I'm saying is that Paige could come on and cut a great heel promo on Ronda, and build to that showdown, and that's another issue. I'm thinking that Ronda's probably going to be. I think she'd be a baby face. I don't know why she wouldn't, but maybe not. I don't know. I audience can surprise us, but like I said, they got WWE and Paul Levesque. Those guys have done a phenomenal job of securing these ladies and training them. That's the one thing I will tell you that. If I got all these WWE shows DVR'd, and I do every week, that I will never fast forward through a women's match. I enjoy watching them.
No, that makes a lot of sense. One thing that still moves the needle in the wrestling world is reminiscing on the Monday Night Wars. You were on the WCW side before they had Nitro. You obviously shifted to WWE, and that's really where a lot of people who are my age now, I'm 31, a lot of people my age recognize you from your time there. Everyone kind of knows the story where WCW got out into a lead in the ratings with the NWO, and then the Attitude Era launched. There was Austin, DX, The Rock. The Undertaker was a mainstay, but I'm wondering, was there ever a time where WCW was winning and you were concerned that WWE would lose the Monday Night Wars and potentially go out of business?
Absolutely not. Not one second. Not one second. I had confidence in our team. I had confidence in our locker room. And I knew that down south, there were a lot of Chiefs and maybe not enough Native Americans. And I knew that was... Hey, they kicked our ass for 83 weeks. And that's there to be congratulated and tip of the hat for that. But I believed in our system. I believed in the Attitude Era. I believed in the guys that we signed and the women that we signed. I believed in our owner. And I believed in myself. So I had never one doubt. And I would tell the guys that. Hey, they're on a streak right now. They're hot, but you guys all well know that our product's better. Our guys are younger. Our guys are more athletic. The guys that we're featuring now, they have some damn sure athletic guys down there, especially those cruiserweights and some of their Hispanic stars. I mean, big time. But they weren't being featured, so they were discounted.
Now, I'd like to pivot back and a quick context. Pivot back to modern days. Ryan's definitely a much bigger New Japan fan than I am, but recently I've been following it a bit more closely, especially with the new kind of Jericho or like a Kenny Omega feud. And so I saw a hilarious press conference from a couple of days ago of an irate Jericho getting jumped by Kenny Omega. And I wanted to get your thoughts on that feud in New Japan as well.
Well, I actually, on Monday, when I recorded my Ross Report podcast, Chris jumped on with me. He was in Japan getting ready to go to the press conference. And if you listen to that interview I did with him, it's probably 15, 20 minutes long, you can almost, if you really read between the lines and then saw what happened at the press conference, you kind of knew that there was more to come as far as the interaction between Jericho and Omega. He didn't say it, but after it happened, I said, oh, that's what he meant, I thought. It's really a good, really, he was really great. And Chris is an old school guy. He uses old school pro wrestling logic because that's what he grew up with, that's what he knows, and that's what he has confidence in. So I've been very much entertained by the interactions, Chris is one of my signees back in the day. Jerry Briscoe and I recruited him, and I remember having a long, long lunch at a place in Tampa called the Bombay Bicycle Club, and talking about his career and what we saw in him if he came to WWE. And I made it very clear, we can't pay you the guarantee that WCW is paying you. So if that's a big issue, then we will just not take any more time, enjoy our lunch, and good luck to each other. But he understood that the upside of what he could achieve in WWE, if he were as good as we thought and he thought he was significantly more than his downside guarantee would be. So we didn't want our talents on salary. They had downside guarantees, but they find a comfort zone there, so guys quit trying to get better. And you want to incentivize all these people, especially in this crazy business, I think. And the better you do, the more you produce, the more money you're going to make. So Chris is an old school guy, and I have no idea if they're going to do something else between now and January 4th. All I know is that I'm excited as hell to be able to call those matches on January 5th. The day after, or a few hours after, actually, and that'll air on a special on Access TV on Saturday night, January 6th, a three-hour special that will include Tanahashi and Naito, Omega and Chris, and Tanahashi and, what's the kid in New Zealand? What the hell? I'm blanking here.
Osprey?
No. He's from New Zealand. Osprey's from England. Jay White is going to wrestle Tanahashi for the Intercontinental title. So those guys will all be on that. Will all be on the, you know, the that show. But we're going to voice over all the Wrestle Kingdom matches on the 5th and 6th. But the 5th, so we'll do the biggest.
Yeah, as Sharif mentioned, I've been watching a lot of New Japan on Access, and you've been calling them and you've been doing a great job on them. And one of the previous times we spoke, you talked about how one of the best feuds you ever called was between Ric Flair and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. And I'm wondering, in your mind, how you would compare and contrast that feud with the wrestling mechanics of Okada and Omega, who have had their own just brilliant series of matches that you've also called.
Well, they're very comparable, Ryan, very comparable. They're different eras, different stylings. So they both are phenomenal. I wouldn't dare say this is better than that, that's better than this, whatever. You know, but certainly Omega and Okada had three classics, big time. And I was very pleased I got to call all three of them. But Omega's he's a very unique, extraordinary talent, and certainly I believe that Jericho, being a fellow Winnipegan, is going to do everything he can to get the absolute best match ever at Kenny Omega. So I'm very looking forward to it. But their matches are outstanding, but it's hard to intelligently rank them when they come out of different eras and again different nuances. But I can never. Ric Flair is the greatest in-ring performer I've ever seen, and Ricky Steamboat ain't too far behind. And they lit it up in three entirely different matches to tell a different story. Even one was two out of three falls, but it was just awesome. And their match in Chicago, Ric Flair says it's one of his favorite matches of all time. He and Steamboat in Chicago. And the title changed hands, and I was so excited about the match. I stayed away from everybody all day about the finish. Didn't want to know. And as I'm walking out to my dump station with Magnum PA, George Scott was the booker, and he said, "Now, you know we're changing the title tonight, right?" I'm like, "Oh, God. Why do you have to tell me that? Don't you think I'd have got it? The 1-2-3 would have been an indication to me that the match is over."
Generally, that's how it works.
It broke my heart. I had to know that. But I will always remember those matches in 89. I don't know how anybody could say, "Well, here's a bunch of matches, Baron Steamboat and Flair. I want to see them if you got that. I'd love to see them."
One more question about like the New Japan stuff. Like the Bullet Club is so over, and I see their shirts everywhere in Chicago, not even at wrestling arenas. And I'm wondering if you think that the Young Bucks and Cody are going to be able to sell out a 10,000 person venue in 2018, which is what it seems like their ambition is.
Well, if you had asked me a year ago, if I thought that, these young cats would be selling t-shirts all over the world and selling a lot of them. I said, "Really? What are they going to use to market that? What's their marketing base?" Well, they showed us all their marketing base. Social media. And they found their audience. And I'm impressed by all those kids. You know, Young Bucks, really good team. Remind me a lot of the Hardys. And even in the Rock and Roll Express before that. Really classic tag team. Big Brother, I like him, and I've known since he was a baby, so I'm doubly proud of him, and I know the Dream would be too. So, to answer your question directly, hell yeah, they can sell out 10,000 seats. It's a matter of where the venue is, when it is, what kind of marketing plan they have put together to get it on sale in a big way, and I would do all I could personally to help them promote that venture, because I applaud their entrepreneurship and I applaud them thinking outside the box and doing something instead of just coming to work and asking what their finish is that night and not contributing a damn thing. A lot of wrestlers are lazy, they're unmotivated, and they're afraid to speak up. I'm sure I'll get a Twitter feed. "Well, JR's talking big because he's already had his career, he's already had his run." But, you know, I'm in a run now. I'm not through. You know, like my friend Don Henley would say, "My big ass will die, but it's not going to be dying of rust. It's going to be dying of use." So, yeah, of course they can. Of course they can. And I applaud them for trying. And I will tell you again, I would be happy to do anything that I could do for them, have them on my podcast, wherever it is, to sell tickets. I really admire what they're doing. And that's how you get over. You think outside the box, and you just don't, you're not a like junkyard dog, you should say, about Ernie Ladd. Don't come to the arena, Ernie, like a cabbage, all head and no rear end. So they got everything, and I love those kids. They're doing good, man. And I'm going to do a live show. I'm sure they'll be on it in March for Access TV in Long Beach, the bigger arena. We're going to do another one in July because I'm signed, sealed, and delivered. I'm back one more year till the end of 2018 with Access TV, and of course, haven't been for Vince. McMahon, that would not have happened. So I'm a very blessed guy, fellas. I'm supposed to be retired. I'm supposed to be drawing Social Security. What the hell with that? I got too much fun to have. I love doing this. I think it keeps me young. And I've had a hell of a year this year. And I needed projects like that, like I did Saturday in Boston, to meet people, meet the fans, meet and greets, all that stuff, Q&As. That really helps me forget some of the negative things I've had to encounter this year.
Now, and believe me, JR, and I know I speak for Ryan, we want you to keep doing this forever, literally, hearing your voice when you're calling a match or you're calling a game is the greatest thing. I know I speak on behalf of a lot of people out there who are also, you know, big fans of your work, that we also want to hear you in the future and just keep on going. And I mean that.
I appreciate that. I would like to just pivot
away for one second to college football. Now, I know when you were on the Herd, you didn't really get to touch on it too much, but Oklahoma, I'm a huge fan of Baker Mayfield. I don't feel like he's getting treated fairly by a lot of pundits out there when they're talking about the top quarterbacks that are entering the draft, whether it's Josh Rosen, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, who are all great quarterbacks. But
yep.
I really love Baker Mayfield's style of play. I love his attitude and swagger on the field. I'm not bothered by a lot of the trash talking on the field, but I feel like he's being a little bit unfairly compared to Johnny Manziel.
Because
he's not necessarily 6'3", because, you know, he had a couple of off-the-field issues, but I really feel like this kid can play. I think they're going to beat Georgia, and I just wanted to get maybe your two cents on Baker Mayfield and Oklahoma.
Well, I asked a pundit a week or so ago before the Big 12 championship game, and he gave me that Johnny Manziel. How's it like? Hey, you weren't around Johnny Manziel, but you're around Baker Mayfield. So I said, what are you talking about? Well, I mean, I said, have you ever talked to him? Now, here's a reporter. Here's a host. Sports guy that's making judgments on a kid's personality and character who he's never had the first conversation with. So I called him out on it. I said, have you talked to him? Have you done your due diligence? Well, so no, that's your answer, right? No. Well, yes, no. Have you talked to his mom and dad? I have, many times. I stood beside the kid when he was in street clothes as a walk-on on the sideline of the OU games. And I'll tell you this real quick story. I'm watching him warm up at the Big 12 game. He warmed up the Big 12 title game pregame in the T-shirts, no helmets, just really early. And he's catching passes. That's how he warms up. He catches passes, not throws them. He catches passes from a student coach. And it may be superstition, I don't know. But the kid has got a hell of an arm, I'll say that. But he throws Vicker this pass, and he turns on, he becomes, all of a sudden, he morphs himself into becoming Odell Beckham Jr. And he catches this thing with one hand. He does it all the time. And as he came down from the one-handed catch, he caught the ball in his right hand. He pivoted in the air and threw a behind-the-back pass back to the kid throwing the ball. And he's about 30 yards away. And so then he sees me with a look of astonishment on my face. And he ran over to me, and he hugged me, and he said, J.R., I love you. Now, those kids have all done this right to me about my wife dying and getting killed unnecessarily right here by my house. But he was with me the whole journey. And I said, I got your back, Baker. And he said, and JR, I got yours. That was a whispered deal. It wasn't that's not a story I've just thrown out there recklessly. It tells me what kind of kid he is. It tells me that when I saw Lincoln Riley a day after he got the OU job, he wanted to talk about me and what they could do and he could do personally to help me through this challenging time. He didn't mention one time about the new job other than, I know you had a great relationship with Bob, and as far as I'm concerned, nothing's changed. And that was music to my ears. So we've got a good group here. He's a good kid. Does he get a little rambunctious? Baker Mayfield might be the heartbreak kid of college football. He's a personality. But boy, the guys love him. He's tough. Two-time walk-on, guys. Two times he's had to walk on. And here's what I love about this is that he went to school at Lake Travis High School in Austin. Yes, he screwed up on that one.
Mac Brown?
Whoever was down there, I don't know. It might have been Charlie Strong, but he was, he didn't meet the measurables. And sometimes in our lives, I say this all the time about myself, hey, a chubby guy with a southern accent, three bouts of facial paralysis is not supposed to be a broadcaster. I get that. But I didn't know that along the journey, and I said, I'm not going to let somebody else define who I am or what I could be. Baker Mayfield is exactly the same thing. He may be 6 feet, he may be 6'1", I don't know. But he doesn't let others measure him and judge him. So I think he's going to have a great NFL career. And this team that's smart enough to check out that character, which they will, and see what he really is, we're going to say, man, we got to get this kid in our locker room.
So I want to get you out of here on this. We really appreciate your time. You said you had a big year calling matches that included New Japan, as we talked about. You called the NXT match between Bate and Dunn in Chicago in a match where it was fantastic. I was in the arena for it, and then I rewatched it later so I could hear you doing it, and I went to your live show the next day. But I'm wondering, of all the wrestling landscape out there, if, like, what are some of your dream wrestling matches to call before it's all said and done of all the talents that are out there? It could be anyone, cross-promotional, or people who are in WWE now or whatever. What are some matches you would just love to call as a broadcaster and a fan?
Well, if it ever comes about, I'd like to call Kurt Angle's last match from Bret Hart. I would love to call one more Rock match. I'd like to say the same thing about Steve Austin, but I'm 99.999% sure he's not doing any more wrestling. He's done. But Angle, some of my guys, the guys I recruited, you know, Coach Switzer, Barry Switzer told me that, JR, if you're a good recruiter and you're a good man, you recruit these kids for life. And so that's kind of how I feel. I've loaned guys money. I've helped guys get child support payments done, and never spoke one word of who they are, nor will I. But that's the obligation I assumed, and I'm happy that I did. The Kurt Angle match would be great. Would be terrific. I'd like to call a live Omega Jericho match someday if they have a second one. Nothing. I don't know if that's even going to happen. But right now, man, it's the best time in the world to be a fan. There's great talent in Ring of Honor. They got a big pay per view on Friday night. I'm excited for those guys. I'm excited for anybody in our business that's able to make a living in the genre that we love. I got a chance to do it. I'm still doing it, and I'm so grateful for that. But I really believe that there's a lot of... If I had a day to think about these bookings, these matches you're talking about, I could probably come up with something more creative, something better. But I like a lot of those kids in NXT. I like a lot. Hey, well, I would like to call an AJ Styles Shinsuke Nakamura match on a big stage.
I feel like that's coming at WrestleMania. It feels like they're building for that.
Yeah, so I always appreciate, Undertaker, one of my rocks in that locker room. I used to call him the conscience of the WWE on television, and people couldn't figure that out. But I guess it was inside. I shouldn't have done it in that respect. But he was the conscience of our locker room. He was the guy. And no matter who all we had there, when they had wrestlers court, there was no doubt he was going to be the judge. Period. End of story. And I realized that the juvenile nature of a kangaroo court was all done in fun. But he was always the judge, and nobody ever appealed nobody ever appealed his judgment or his decisions. So there's a lot of guys to take. If Taker has a last match, don't know if that's going to happen. Man, I'd love to be a part of that. But when I got the call to do Undertaker and Reigns at WrestleMania this year, I found out on Saturday I had that match the day before. I just signed my contract on Friday, the day before that. So it's kind of boom, boom, boom. But I love Mark Calloway, and I think that I'll do anything in the world for him. And calling the last match would be really, really an honor.
Thank you so much, JR. We really appreciate your time. Everybody who's listening to this should really go read Slobberknocker, My Wife in Wrestling, which is JR's autobiography, which was released a couple months ago. If you're in the New England area, go see his stand-up show in Boston. He'll be doing more of them next year. If they come to a town near you, I guarantee, having been to two of them, that it'll be worth your while. Thank you again. We really appreciate it.
I appreciate you guys. Let's
all right, thanks. You too, JR.
Bye. strangers turn strangers.